Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99, and you can check out everything we have here at Sports Ethos over at Ethos Fantasy BB. That is where all of our baseball content gets shared, podcasts, articles, news and notes, everything we got does get shared out or posted directly through Ethos Fantasy BB, so make sure you're checking that out. And also checking out our draft guide. I'm so proud of the work that we have done here at Sports Ethos to pull this together. We're looking at, I believe, 25 articles talking about strategy. We have sleepers and busts. We have, of course, my rankings and projections. We have dynasty rankings. We have dynasty prospect lists. And we have our draft tracker launching in the next day or so as well. We're just making sure everything works 100% before we get it out to the public. But essentially, if you've missed any of these talks about the draft guide and the draft tracker in particular, this is a program that is, so we had one for basketball that was an Excel sheet, but this one is actually right on our website, right in the draft guide. So you load up the players who are being drafted in real time and it will analyze your team. It will tell you which categories are looking good, which ones you might need some help on. And we are doing that through the ATC projections that I've mentioned here on the show so many times. We've partnered with Ariel Cohen and we are going to be using the ATC projections to power our draft tracker tool. So those are battle tested. Every single year, they come out as the most accurate projections in the entire industry, and now you can use them directly to help you in your draft. So that's something that we are very excited about. It's all available as part of our Fantasy Pass, and you guys, like I said, can check that out in the description of the episode here. Today, we are going to be looking back on the last couple days worth of spring training notes. There are quite a few of them, so we're going to get going here talking about Tuesday first, and then we'll move forward into today's stuff. Tyler McGill, my goodness, I can never quit Tyler McGill, and he makes it very hard to even try and quit him. He threw three innings yesterday, struck out six, walked two, and had a 35% CSW, did not allow any hits or any earned runs. Velo and spin rates were both within the normal range, and he threw nearly 60% strikes. It's a fine number. Generally speaking, it's not like a holy shit kind of number, but for him, that's really good. Tyler McGill has struggled with his command over the specifically last year. But it's generally something that he has needed to work on, and you know, it looks like he is working on it. His spring line is filthy. Eight innings pitched, four hits, one earned run. He has struck out 13, and those two walks were the only two that he's had in his three spring outings. The word free, it gets overused in fantasy sports, any fantasy sport, really. He's free this year. Oh, you don't have to pay for him. He's free. McGill actually is kind of free, though. He's going in the 400 to 500, sometimes in the 600s. If you're looking at certain NFBC drafts, 12-teamers, there are some of them where he's not even being drafted at all. He's definitely somebody who is worth taking a shot on. If he can maintain even 75, 80% of what he's doing in the spring, he would be a massive steal, and I have put him inside of my top 100 starting pitcher rankings. Little giveaway there. He's in the top 100 now. He was not somebody that I was initially thinking was going to be there, but he's inside, and he might even get a little bit of a bump up as well. He's looked excellent in spring. We've seen it over the last couple of years, not so much in 2023, but 2021 and 2022, he was really damn good. The supporting metrics were excellent. The strikeout minus walk rates were really good, and last year, he just didn't have it. He has had some injuries that he's had to come back from, so there's a chance that he is just healthy now, and Tyler McGill can be kind of, you know, what we've been calling him for the last couple of years on and off, which is the baby Jacob deGrom. If you just watch him pitch, McGill was there in New York with deGrom, and it's hard to think that anybody around deGrom developing is not going to take a few things. If you just put them up side by side, a picture or video of deGrom pitching, their delivery, or deGrom's delivery and McGill's delivery side by side, It'd be very hard to tell them apart if you just, like, remove the jersey number. It's a little different. Like, it's not exactly the same as it was 2 years ago. You can distinguish them, but he is little baby DeGrom, right? I don't think he's ever going to be Jacob DeGrom. Don't misinterpret that. He's not going to suddenly have a 40% strikeout rate and be the best pitcher of his generation. No, we're not saying that. But I think there's definitely value to be had in Tyler McGill. As your last pick, last couple rounds, I really think he makes a lot of sense. Let's get to O'Neill Cruz. Holy shit. O'Neill Cruz had a 470-foot home run yesterday. And you can check it out on my Twitter. You can just, if you look up his name, you'll find the video. The pitch that he hit the home run on was, like, at his eyeballs. It was nowhere near the strike zone. He absolutely jacked it. I have not really understood, excuse me, the massive discount that there has been on O'Neill Cruz in draft season. 70s, 80s, 90s type of range. The thing that I've heard a lot is, oh, he's injury prone, right? He's injury prone. You can't draft him. An injury at, what was it, age 22, last 23, an age 23 injury based on a bad slide is not going to put an injury prone label on a player in my book. I think it's a bad injury, yes, for sure. He missed the whole season. It's not an indication of being injury prone. He's still kind of a relative unknown. There's still a very, very small sample size of O'Neill Cruz, and that's, I think, why he's still available at pick 75, 80, generally speaking. If he had had 5 years of what we were thinking he can do, 25, 25 type seasons, and then he got hurt in year six, back for year seven, I don't think anybody's fading him. It's because he is just this unknown kind of where, again, we don't know that much about O'Neill Cruz. The average baseball fan, I mean, I don't think he's even touched 100 games in the majors. I think he's just under 100 games playing out in Pittsburgh. So, relative unknown, I think, is still a very fair title for him. He has played in 98 big league games in his career. In those games, 19 homers, 13 stolen bases. So there is a lot to really like with O'Neill Cruz. I think that he is being too heavily discounted, and he's somebody that I have on a lot of rosters this year because of it. Jackson Holliday went 3-for-4 yesterday, had a stolen base. His spring line, he's 7-for-21, 2 stolen bases, 2 triples, and he's 1-for-1 in the stolen base department. He's been getting fairly regular reps out of the leadoff spot. Now, he's not going to be the leadoff hitter. We've talked about the Orioles' leadoff spot more than any other leadoff spot here in the preseason. Gunnar Henderson looks like the guy, and then he goes down for a few days, and it's Mullins consistently. It has been Jackson Holliday as well. Holliday's not going to be leading off, but I think it's a very good indication that he will be in the opening day starting lineup. I'd be, at this point, shocked if Jackson Holliday is starting the season in AAA. And if he does, then we're talking a couple weeks. We're talking not very long until you are able to get him up on your roster. So if you, there's a few different ways to go about this, right? You can not draft him in the shallowest of leagues, and maybe he doesn't get drafted, maybe. But I think pretty much every league, whether you're talking NFBC or Yahoo or ESPN, he's not probably not going to go undrafted. So you could make the argument, well, maybe if he's not going to start in the majors, I could just forego him, put him in a minor league slot or something, and then he's kind of free. I don't have to pay for him with a waiver claim or something in season. I don't even really think we need to entertain that necessarily, just because I'm so certain at this point he's going to start in the major leagues. I would be gobsmacked if Jackson Holliday is playing any games in AAA or in the minor leagues for the rest of his career, outside of potential rehabbing stuff or whatever. There's no need for him to play in the minors. He has proven it. Now, if he's just awful, and if he's, you know, I hate to invoke the name of Jared Kelenic, but if he is like that type of player this year, then sure, he probably goes down. But to start the year, I don't see any reason why Holliday would not be on that opening day roster starting at second base. Garrett Whitlock had a fairly solid outing himself. 3 innings pitched, 4 hits is not great. He allowed 2 earned runs, 2 strikeouts. It wasn't like anything crazy. The line isn't the big story, though. It's Lucas Giolito, really. So he's likely done for the year, which is just brutal for Red Sox fans, for fantasy managers, everybody hoping for a bounce back. I've drafted Giolito a couple times because he's been, you know, again, to misuse the word, he's been pretty much free, like 270, 280 type of range. Okay, you know, he's your 7th starting pitcher, 6th starting pitcher, whatever. But he's likely done for the year at this point, and that means that there is going to be a spot open in the Red Sox rotation. I've been saying it for weeks and weeks and weeks and tweeting about it that I think Garrett Whitlock should be a starting pitcher. I think he has the talent to do it. A matter of volume is definitely a question. Is he able to throw 130, 140 innings? Maybe not, but I think that he will get a shot in the rotation. The mess of Giolito just kind of solidified that. I was already thinking that there was a chance that he was going to get into the rotation. But now with the spot open, it would make no sense to not put him there. 21% career strikeout minus walk rate. I mean, that's really, really good. 3.27 Sierra, 3.38 XFIP. These are really, really good numbers. Now, they've come predominantly as a reliever, but I think he is worth stretching out, and that's what they've been doing. And I do think he is worth a shot at the end of your drafts. I think that what he can do, it may not be a set-it-and-forget-it type. There are going to be starts at Fenway. Again, assuming he does get the rotation spot, which isn't confirmed, but I think it's pretty close to it. There are going to be times at Fenway where you don't want to start him, and that's understandable. But I think a lot of the time, Garrett Whitlock is going to be a pretty solid start this year, assuming that he is in the rotation. I'm willing to take a chance. I am willing to draft Garrett Whitlock in those last few rounds as of right now. We may get confirmation that he's in the rotation. That'll shoot his price up. If we hear that he's not going to make the rotation, then this becomes moot, and we don't really need to worry about him outside of streaming him potentially for a spot start. Let's talk about his teammate, Tyler O'Neill. He's put together a really nice spring. He's 4-for-14, but he has walked four times as well. He scored 7 runs. He's hit a homer, and he is 2-for-2 stealing bases. As a middle-of-the-order bat in Fenway, he's free of all the shenanigans and bullshit that happened in St. Louis, where he and Ollie Marmol did not seem to get along very well. And honestly, I don't know that Ollie Marmol is that great of a manager based on some of the things we saw. So I'm kind of inclined to take Tyler O'Neill's side in that whole thing, especially with, like, Wilson Contreras is going to be the right fielder, and it's all the weird stuff that happened in St. Louis. I'm glad that O'Neill's out of there. Now, will he be able to be healthy is the main question here, because I think a full Tyler O'Neill season returns value at his ADP pretty easily. He's going to like the 240s, 220, 240, like that type of range generally. I think he should be able to thrive as a middle-of-the-order bat at Fenway. Personally speaking, I mean, he might be batting fourth some days. He might be fifth or sixth. It's a solid enough lineup where that's not a huge concern for me wherever it is. I'm pretty damn interested in Tyler O'Neill. New location, sometimes we can read too much into that and say, oh, he's a new person now. It's, you know, I wouldn't go that far, but I do think that he makes a lot of sense as like your third outfielder, your fifth outfielder, your utility spot. That's where I've been drafting him. He's not like your number one or number two outfielder. He is, again, a pretty inexpensive play this year, and I think if you can grab Tyler O'Neill later on in your drafts, he's at that point where if he doesn't work out, you know, you're not holding on to him all year because you spent the high draft pick on him. You're going getting him after pick 200, well after pick 200 in a lot of cases. If it pans out, you might have a 30-20 guy. If it doesn't, then he's waiver wire fodder, which is where a lot of guys are going at the end of drafts anyway, right back to the waiver wire in the month of April. That's just what happens with a lot of them.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's talk about Trevor Rogers' positive spring debut. It wasn't anything crazy. Again, 2 innings pitched, 1 hit, 1 strikeout, no walks. He didn't allow any runs. We'll take any positives after how the last 2 years have gone. Like, they've been absolutely dreadful. The trajectory of Trevor Rogers has just been awful. The two guys in that rookie of the year contest, in that race that year, him and Jonathan India, have both had kind of rough trajectories just thinking about it. But there's a lot to like with Rogers still. He's a young guy in an organization that really knows what they're doing with developing pitchers. And he's, again, very cheap. He's super, super, super cheap. A lot of 12-team leagues I've been looking at, like Yahoo, we've been doing a lot of mock drafts too. 12-teamers, 10-teamers, he's not even getting drafted. He's somebody where you can kind of just put him on your bench, stream him the first couple weeks of the season, maybe it works out, or even just use a last-round pick on him. And again, the upside, he showed us as a rookie, he can have a sub-3 ERA. Like, once you've done that, especially in your rookie season, you've proven that it is, you know, something you are capable of, at least. Not to say he's going to do it again, but there's a lot of upside with Trevor Rogers. And I think we've kind of maybe given up a little bit too early on him. He's still a very young guy, mid-20s. Like, I think that we're still probably going to see some very good seasons out of him, especially if he is a Miami Marlin, because they just know what they're doing with pitching. Just look at their track record the last several seasons. Let's talk about some of today's notes, and we'll get started off with Taj Bradley. Very positive spring debut. 3 innings pitched, he allowed 2 hits, no earned runs. He struck out 1, did not walk a batter, and had a 35% CSW. Velo was up across the board, 3.1 miles an hour on his curveball, and his spin on his curveball was also way through the roof. There's a lot to like about Taj Bradley. He burned us last year, right? No question. He started off real hot. You might have spent a lot of fab money, a high waiver priority, and it looked like you got yourself a steal, and then the bottom fell out drastically with Taj Bradley to the point where he was a must drop at one point. But he's a year older, pitching for one of the best organizations in baseball, right? He threw 141 innings in 2023. He's ready for a big workload. Whether or not Tampa will give it to him is another question, but he is ready to take a step forward. I really, really like Taj Bradley this year. He is somebody that I think is worth targeting in all drafts. Again, a very cheap player. Tampa is just always kind of, you're always a little more interested in Tampa than maybe you should be, but Bradley does have a lot of pedigree that comes with him, and he did show it, albeit for a small sample size, that he can have success at the big league level. A year older, that organization, I really like Taj Bradley. He's just not somebody that costs a lot. You can take him on a lot of teams, and it's not going to be really hard to build your team around that. Oh, man, Carlos Rodon. Let's get to Carlos Rodon. 3 innings pitched, 5 hits, 3 earned runs. He had 1 strikeout and 1 walk, and a 27% CSW, which is not terrible. It's really hard to know what to make of Rodon at this point. Velo was down significantly across the board, between 1.5 to 3.5 miles per hour on each pitch, and the spin on his curveball was drastically down. I've bumped him down a few spots in my rankings. It's very hard to figure out where to put him exactly. I'm trying to stay confident, but he is still an incredibly risky investment, especially because his price has been on the rise. It will probably become stagnant, and he'll be not going up boards, maybe shooting down a little bit, not shooting down, but I don't know that the price raise is going to really be going much farther up than it already is. In some rooms, potentially a top 100 pick over the last week. At this point, I'm staying away from Rodon, and I hate to say that, but I've drafted him 3 times out of my 9 completed drafts. That's enough for me. I likely won't be drafting him again unless his price really falls. I'm interested, and I was interested especially early in draft season. It's one of the benefits of drafting throughout the whole year, is I was getting him at the 170, 160 mark a lot, and I think one of the shares I have was potentially even, maybe not past 200, but like 195 or something. It's like, okay, at that point, I'll take a chance. But he's pushing top 100 pick recently. I don't think I can get behind him when he is that expensive. That's just too much of a risk for me to take on a guy like Rodon, who I do believe in. But again, we've seen some pretty rough stuff here in spring as well. We've came with off, right? Like, it's crazy. He had a 97 mile per hour bullpen session and then followed by a couple of kind of rough spring outings. So he's very, very tricky to figure out. But let's move on to Joe Ryan. 3 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 1 strikeout, and a 27% CSW himself. The spin rates were up, and so was the velo, specifically on his secondary offerings. This is kind of important for Joe Ryan. Splitter was up 5 miles an hour based on what it was averaging last year. And the spin went from about 1,400 RPM to about 1,800 RPM on the splitter. It was just in another world today. Slider was also up 3 miles an hour and had a slight increase in spin rate as well. He was really unlucky, Joe Ryan, like incredibly unlucky last season. The home run per 9 was nearly at 2. It was 1.8. There's almost no chance of that repeating. There's almost no chance of it repeating. It's such a high number, and it did spike in the second half of the year. There was a couple outings of like 5 home runs, 6 home runs. Like, that's going to shoot up the whole season long number. But is it something we should really actually look at year over year and say, this is who he is? No, it's not the case. I would be shocked if he doesn't get back on track. Minnesota is quite the little pitching factory these days. I am sure they've been working with Joe Ryan throughout the offseason to fix whatever was wrong last year. I know there was an injury problem as well, but the success on the field was not there. The supporting metrics are really, really good, and that's kind of what I'm leaning into. The supporting metrics, the strong strikeout minus walk rates, and the fact that it was a really unlucky homer per 9 last season. So I think that Joe Ryan is borderline top 25 pitcher in baseball this year. I don't have him quite that high, but I could definitely see him getting there. Let's talk about Jesus Luzardo. 3 2/3, pretty ugly stuff here. 4 earned runs, he allowed 6 hits. He did strike out 3, but he allowed 3 home runs, only a 25% CSW. Now, Jesus Luzardo's first spring training start was against a fully powered Phillies lineup, and he did very well. So I'm not overly concerned here. He should still be considered a borderline top 25 starting pitcher. There's no need to be that worried. Now, if he gets rocked every time out in spring, then that's probably a bad sign. But as of right now, I'm going to chalk it up to a bad day, and not really let that alter how I feel about Jesus Luzardo. Let's wrap it up with Juan Duran. Man, he threw the five fastest pitches of spring, at least he had, or five fastest pitches of today's spring training games, I should say. I'm not sure if that has changed in a couple of these later games, but he threw three pitches over 100. They were at 100.7, and he also had one at 99.9 and one at 99.5. I've been restraining myself from bumping Duran up and up and up and up and up. I really just want, like, honestly, I want to put him as my number one closer. I'm not going to do it because it's probably foolish, but I think he arguably is the best bullpen arm in baseball. Like, he is so, so good. A legitimate, at worst, top three arm in the game in baseball. In the pen, I should say. He's not a top three starter, but in terms of bullpen arms, Duran's talent is just unbelievable. The only question is how the Twins are going to use him. Are the Twins going to pull any weird Griffin Jacks type of bullshit in the eighth or ninth innings? I don't know. I hope that they won't, but I think there's a chance that maybe they will, which is the only reason why. Like, if we knew Duran had a manager who was just going to throw him out there, he's going to be a 40-save guy, he's pretty easily number one closer for me. The fact that we do have some concerns about usage is literally the only thing holding me back on Duran. If we heard from the manager, like, yep, every time we have a save situation, it's going to be Duran, then that would probably, I don't know if it would make me put him at number one, but that's kind of the only thing holding us back right now from Juan Duran just blowing the hell up, and that is how he is going to be used. I'll be very, very interested to see how that works out. I've drafted him a few times. I think he can return number one closer value, and I'm hoping that he does get there because, if it doesn't happen this year, there will be a season where Duran is a number one closer. And I don't know if it happens in the next 2 years, 5 years, but he will get there. Duran definitely has the talent to make that work. It's just a matter of if they'll let him. But that will do it for us, guys. Really appreciate everybody coming in and checking out the show. If you haven't done so already, rating and review is gold. I know that I'm talking about the draft guide and Fantasy Pass, and that's actually, you know, it's a financial thing. You got to spend some money on that, and I understand not everybody is in a position to be doing that. If you want to help out, but you're not financially able to, hitting that five-star button, leaving a couple kind words in the review section is just as helpful, honestly. It really does go a long way into getting the algorithm going and getting more people to see the show, which is obviously my goal here. So I appreciate all of you who have done that already and those who will do it after hearing it on this episode. But that'll do it, guys. We'll be back again tomorrow. If you got any questions about anything, it's JoeOrico99 over on the Twitter and EthosFantasyBB to be keeping up with all of our work. But that'll do it, guys. We'll see you tomorrow. But until then, take care and have a great night.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.